With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Burns. I'm a Manchester City fan. I'm on Twitter at Richard the Burns, and I'm a member of the Blue Moon podcast.
Hi, I'm Steve McGugan. I'm the former chairman of the New York Spurs, nyspurs.com, and I'm also a Northern Ireland fan, so I'm happy to talk about either aspect of that tonight.
All right, thanks to you both for joining us today. We're going to start off where basically everyone is starting off with Mourinho-y stuff, but we're not going to get into the antics or the losses, which I'm sure Richard finds greatly amusing. But a lot of people are suggesting that Mourinho should be sacked, that he's lost the dressing room. So I wanted to start by asking if you think, not just he, but if you can recall a time when a manager turned around a dressing room from one that clearly was not playing for them to kind of recommitting it and to them achieving their goals.
In recent Premier League history, and putting it in the context of the club and the level that Manchester United are at, or at least aspire to be at, and the size of the club, although it's clearly not a realistic ambition at the moment, that's a club that has ambitions on winning the Premier League title again, although it's been, 2013 was the last time, that's clearly where they want to be at. They're a club that have aspirations of getting back to the European top table on the pitch. Clearly they're already there off the pitch, they're still a huge, huge club. I think in the context of those kind of clubs, off the top of my head, no, I can't really recall a situation where it seems a manager has completely lost the dressing room. And it does look like that at the moment. You watch that team and it doesn't look like a team that are... I would obviously never suggest that a top-level team are not trying in any way or phoning it in, but it certainly doesn't look like a team that has any extra impetus or is particularly fighting for the manager or giving any extra to dig him out of a hole. It looks like, at the risk of stating a cliche, it just looks like classic Mourinho third season. He's picking his battles very, very badly, as he quite often does at this point. No matter how much he denies it, he is clearly ostracised and alienated at least one of his star players in Paul Pogba. He's failing to get the best out of another one of his star players in Sanchez, or should be one of his star players. It all hints at the dressing room having fallen away from him a little bit, or a lot. And yeah, I can't really recall a similar circumstance where a manager has turned that around, or certainly, you know, I suppose it depends on what we mean by turn it around. If Mourinho was to stay for the season, I imagine he would arrest this. You wouldn't see United finishing in 10th or 11th. I'd be fairly certain of that. But he won't turn it around. I'd be fairly confident that he won't turn it around to put United in any kind of contention at the top end of the table. They're already a long, long way behind City and Liverpool and Chelsea for this point. I think the season is already destined to fall well below expectation and demand, and I think it's very, very hard to see how that can possibly be turned around at this point. It's not impossible, but I don't see the foundations for it. I don't hear anything from Mourinho that says it can happen. I think it's a defeatist way of talking when a manager talks about, you've got to trust that I'm fighting every day to improve things. That isn't a Jose Mourinho kind of speech. So no, the short answer is no. I can't recall a situation like this where a manager has dug himself out and really turned it around. I think that the best that you get in this situation is a sort of a holding on for the season and making the best of a bad job. And it really does look like a bad job at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I for American listeners who may not really have an idea or a visual idea of what it means to lose a dressing room, I would recommend that you watch The Damned United, which is a great movie about Brian Clough when he went to Leeds and basically the team turned against him. And so it's hard for a manager, no matter how skilled they are, to actually get the players on side if they're committed to forming up against them. And I think, as Richard said there, I think it comes back to what your expectations are for an acceptable or successful season. And clearly, obviously, United are, you know, they put themselves in a different category than a lot of other clubs. In recent times, I suppose you could point to clubs that have found themselves in relegation difficulty and have eventually managed to pull off what's called great escapes, where a club has had a bad run of form and that's, you know, they've sunk to the table and then the manager has been able to turn that around. But that's primarily a form issue, not a morale thing, but it does sort of bring out the who's with you and who's against you mentality within the dressing room. But I going back a little further, you know, for United, it's Alex Ferguson. It's often said that no modern manager would get the number of winless seasons that Fergie got at the start of his Man United career. Just to the pressures of the modern game and the modern business. But, you know, has Mourinho lost the dressing room? Clearly he's lost Pogba. But if he's lost the dressing room, then maybe he should be more concerned with losing the boardroom.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Although there were a lot contending that he'd lost the boardroom over the summer, which is why they weren't really investing, although implying that there hadn't been millions upon millions spent the previous two summers. But obviously,
it also
Paul.
Depends on who else is out there, who they can go and replace him with, if that's, you know, what it comes down to. And this is one of the things that annoys me every time is, you know, it's always Pochettino's mentioned. Zidane, Pochettino, those are the two names that keep coming up. And, you know, Poch has said, you know, we went through a little wavering patch the last couple of weeks ago, but we seem to be back on track now. And Poch gave that interview to Marca the other day, saying, you know, that he, the only jobs that he wanted, the only jobs he was interested in, were the Argentinian national job and managing Newell's, which we knew about before. So yeah, I mean, it's the soap opera that plays out on the back pages, and as you know, Kev, it's clickbait as much as anything else. But there is, you know, this is a team that finished second last year, for goodness sake, and it comes to what the expectations are for how they judge success on the year.
Yeah, it's an excellent point. It is worth pointing out that they did finish only behind City in the title race last season, although it should also be noted one of the records City broke was the amount of points in between first and second by the end of the year. So we'll leave the Mourinho stuff there. At time of recording, there's been no news, so it does not seem like he'll be sacked after the loss to West Ham at the weekend. So we'll just kind of keep you apprised, but I'm sure pretty much any outlet where you follow any football news will let you know what's going on with Mourinho at any point. Next up, let's talk about Fulham a little bit. We had Russ Goldman on in the preseason, and he was very excited about what Fulham could do in the Premier League. They were fairly clearly the second best team behind Wolverhampton last season, and they've picked up some pretty impressive results thus far. Fulham a little disappointing, though. If they were hoping for a top 10 finish their first year up, you know, it's a bit early, but it doesn't seem like that's really on track. Are you guys surprised that Fulham are struggling a little bit here at the start of the season?
Yeah, a little bit. They came up with obviously the commitment and all the talk about the football that they play. I think at times they referred to the City of the Championship in terms of the way they play. Clearly not that they didn't win the league, but that style of football is clearly something that Djukanovic has ingrained in him. He likes to play good football, and to be fair to him, he's not abandoned that in any way. I think the best I can talk on Fulham is having seen them live at the Etihad when they played us. And the first minute, had me worried, because as daft as this sounds, it was the best first minute I can remember a team having at the Etihad in about 5 years. They came straight out at City, and no team does that. And there was a little bit of me thought, hang on, are we in for a bit of a game today? And then about 30 seconds later, they'd given the ball away in the middle of the pitch and City had scored, and they never looked like getting back into it, despite having that. Fulham never like getting back into it, despite having that commitment to trying to play through City. I don't know whether I would call that naive, or I mean, it's certainly principled, and I respect that. But they got very, very sloppy in the middle. They could have conceded numerous times from just giving the ball away. And while City were good that day, in truth, Fulham probably didn't make us work as hard as we should have had to for a 3-0 home win. Clearly, their season is not going to be defined by how they play against the likes of City. I gather, although I didn't see the game live myself, I gather they were quite good against Spurs for a while. I spoke to Russ as well about that game, and he said that same sort of thing. Djukanovic he didn't sort of sacrifice anything in his principles. He wanted to go and play his way, and if that was good enough, then great. And obviously, it wasn't. But the season won't be defined by results against City and against City, Spurs and the like. I think the bigger concern will be losing games like they've just lost. Quite a heavy defeat to Everton. Although Everton are a good team, they've not been in great winning form themselves. Fulham probably would have thought they could pick up a point there at least. And the only win to the name is against a Burnley team that started the season in absolutely dreadful form. So, in terms of how they're playing, my only real experience is seeing them live in a game that they probably didn't expect to win and may have seen as a free hit. But in terms of the results, they're definitely, I think, below where they'd expect to be now.
Yeah, I was at that game at Wembley when we beat them 3-1. And there were moments where, I mean, we dominated the majority of the first half, but we couldn't score. And there were moments where, they could have caught us on the break, and really they should have. There was one particular moment I was thinking of, but then Moura scored literally with 5 minutes to go in the first half. Beautiful goal. And up until that point, he'd been, very frustrating. And Mitrovic then equalised. It was a very, very typical opening to the second half for Spurs, who, half the team sometimes still feels like they're in the tunnel for the first 5 minutes of the second half. And it was a real wakey-wakey moment as well. But again, I think, like you say, it's tough to judge them against teams that you would expect to be in the top 4, 5, 6. They had a couple of nice movements, but you never really got the sense that they were going to take the game by the scruff of the neck. Especially after we went ahead at the end of the first half, they were always sort of trying to pull it back. But I watched the highlights of the Everton game, and they were very disappointing. I thought Fulham, they'd be disappointed by that outcome as well. But and Everton haven't obviously clicked themselves particularly well this season. So that's a tricky one. I think their defense is an issue. It's going to be an issue for them, and they've already got a -8 goal difference. So that's going to be a challenge going forward. So
picking up the defense as the weak point is very astute. They are. No other Premier League team has conceded more goals this season. They're tied for last with two other clubs right now. And I think a large part of that is probably communication issues, because they basically replaced their entire back line in the summer. So I'm curious here, do you think that the fact they brought in basically a whole new 11 in the offseason is affecting them on the pitch now?
It's probably hard to see. Well, it's hard to see how it wouldn't be when you read across the stats, and you can see that they have, like you say, the joint worst defence. They're conceding plenty of goals. As I said, against City, there were lots of very, very basic errors that came not just from the defence, but that came from sort of the base of the midfield as well. I think communication does play a huge part in that. When we're talking here a simple case of a pass being played by a midfielder. I'm pretty sure it was Seri who gave the ball away for our first goal in that game. And he's played the ball just into space. It's not like he's looked round and checked for a defender and then misjudged the pass. He's just played the ball where he thought somebody should be, which suggests that that's either he's completely out of tune with the rest of his team, or that's something that they've worked on in training and in when they work on their positional play, and then either he's misread the situation or one of his defenders has misread the situation and not pushed up. But either way, that's a communication error. I suppose it's just no communication at all. So, yeah, I think that's obviously only one small example, but you extrapolate that and look at them, they are conceding a lot. You would have to imagine that replacing an entire back line and starting a season in a league higher than you've been used to is going to have some kind of impact. I suppose it doesn't always read across that it will be dreadful at the start. You sometimes get away with it for a little while. Sometimes things just click instantly and partnerships form brilliantly immediately. But I guess that's not been the case for Fulham so far. So, yeah, I think there's definitely something in that point, Kev.
Yeah, it's that old debate, isn't it, Kev, about exactly how long it takes new signings to gel. Do you need them in the build-up to the start of the season for your pre-season tour or whatever it is you're bothered with, or the commitments that they have in tournaments and that sort of thing. But also, don't forget, Wolves also made a whole bunch of signings in the off-season, and they were already a pretty strong team coming up anyway. So it's going to be interesting to just compare Wolves with the other teams that came up and see if that's the yardstick that we're going to have to judge them by.
Yeah, Fulham have certainly struggled. I'm not sure whether or not they'll be in the relegation fight. I would assume they won't, because you'd assume this communication would improve throughout the season. And I agree with Richard's early point that Jokanović is a very good manager. And wrote an article a few years back on ways to avoid relegation, and one of them was if you have a goal scorer score more than like 12, sorry, if you have a striker score more than 12 goals in your first promoted season, you basically stay up statistically. I think there's been two times in the last 10 years where that hasn't been the case. And having somebody like Mitrovic up front that has started so well, Everton a little bit to the side, I think is promising for them. But when it comes to the sides that could be in trouble for relegation, Jake, who often talks about Newcastle on this very show, posed the question of, has there been another time where in September, of course this is going to be published in October, but where in September it felt pretty clear which three teams were all going down, referring to Newcastle, Huddersfield, and Cardiff. Do you think those three clubs are the ones most in trouble, and is it crazy to think that this early in the season?
No, it's not crazy at all, but I don't agree with the premise of the three. I think Cardiff and Huddersfield are in trouble. They're in big trouble, and that's going to be a real challenge for them to turn that around. Newcastle, you've got teams like Newcastle, Southampton, Brighton could still get dragged back into this, and we talked about Fulham as well. It's the goals conceded. It's the number of goals that you're actually letting in is going to be an issue. And obviously, you're compounding the Newcastle problem with the issues off the field as well. So that's always going to be a problem. But no, I don't think it's cut and dried yet that those three will go down. I think certainly Huddersfield, it's going to be tough for them. I mean, they would probably admit themselves they should have gone down last year, to be honest, but great credit to them for, again, pulling out one of those great escapes. Cardiff, I haven't seen anything of them in the highlights that I've seen so far to show that they're actually stepping up a division. But then, of course, we play them this coming weekend, so there's always the fate of eating your words after the weekend. But I think it's still too early, Kev, to be honest, although those two teams, Cardiff and Huddersfield, unfortunately, I think are in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, again, at the risk of taking a very insular view of this, I was in Cardiff recently for the Cardiff City game. The Cardiff and Manchester City game. And Cardiff were terrible. I mean, for the first 30 minutes, they did a good job of closing out space, which is a very predictable way that they were going to play, but I don't blame them. They clearly didn't think they had much chance of winning the game. So they did a good job for 30 minutes of making it a little bit frustrating. City were trying to go over the top quite a lot, and Cardiff forced that. But as soon as Aguero scored the first, Cardiff had absolutely nothing in response. And one of the things that was really notable about them, not to pigeonhole Neil Warnock too much, but there was no fight about them. There was no physicality. And one part of me sort of thinks, well, is that good? Does that mean that Warnock's trying to evolve and not just relying on the things that have not fared well for him in the Premier League before? But then there's another part of me that thinks you really can't teach an old dog new tricks. And in that regard, Warnock is very much an old dog, isn't he? So that lack of, it's not a lack of effort, but that lack of obvious fight and getting stuck in and that kind of physicality that teams at the lower end often use against the more flair teams and the fancier teams, getting in the faces. There was just none of it. And I don't know whether that was intentional or whether they wanted to do that but just couldn't get near City. But I only recall like one bad tackle, and we had plenty of him when we played him in the Cup last year. So, yeah, it was just odd. There was so little. Huddersfield, I think, have looked terrible in almost every time I've seen them play again. Particularly against City, we beat them 6-1, and they were bad. Their problem is they just don't score goals. They don't have a goal scorer. Is it? I'm trying to remember the stat that I heard recently. I should have had it to hand really, but is it something like March or April was the last time they scored more than one in a game? And obviously, you have a summer period that accounts for part of that gap, so it does become a bit misleading. But it is a problem for them. And so at the moment, they're just in that rut where they know that they're not playing well. They're effectively going into games knowing that they're going to concede at least one goal, but in the likelihood multiple, and that they don't have an effective response to that. And they're proving that week in, week out. And I would imagine it must just feel like a chore to them at the moment, going on the pitch and trying and getting through a game and trying to pick up that elusive 3 points. I know there's a few teams in that boat at the moment, but I think Huddersfield and Cardiff particularly don't look like they have much of a way out of it. Newcastle, I believe in Benitez as a manager too much to think that they can be written off in September, October. What Benitez does really, really well, and what he gets a lot of criticism for when he plays against City, Chelsea, Tottenham, etc. He gets criticism for the way he plays and shutting up shop, but they don't take a single hammering. It's very, very rare they take a massive beating. And you look what that did for them last year. They got to 10th because that must have done wonders for the confidence. They could come off the pitch against a City or a Chelsea thinking we've only got beat 1-0 or a Liverpool, and they'd sort of heads held high. Look at Cardiff this season. They've already conceded 4 to Chelsea, 5 to City, Huddersfield, 6 to City. Those kind of things take the toll. So I think Newcastle are an entirely different proposition. But the variables with Cardiff and Huddersfield, and Cardiff in particular, are that they might sack the manager in a couple of weeks. I'd say Huddersfield are less likely to do that with Wagner, I would say. But Cardiff will have to act soon, because Warnock, I mean, he barely wins Premier League games, never mind relegation battles. I was surprised that he signed a new contract and started the season, because he's always been on record as saying how much he doesn't like the Premier League in the first place. So, yeah, I think Warnock will go, and maybe that will, if Cardiff bring a good manager in, a good manager at this level, then maybe they'll have a turnaround in fortunes. But I think they're going to have to act fast.
Yeah, I think we
played Huddersfield last week, and we were far from on top form. But you never got a sense that they were ever going to give us a game. But I think that's a very good point about Warnock. That I think if Cardiff, you know, it's too early to say that it's set in stone. But I from what I've seen, I think they need a big change, and that could be the biggest change if they can get somebody at that level that can actually just galvanize the club.
Yeah, I think Huddersfield could be okay because they actually play some pretty decent stuff in the midfield. There's just no attack, really. Van Lapara is fast, so sometimes that creates stuff, but he didn't play against us. But the striker position is just not good for them. Meunier was decent in France, but just clearly hasn't done it in the Premier League. On the Cardiff side, they bought in the summer like they were going to be in the Championship next year. And it seems like they've kind of have a self-fulfilling prophecy there. Warnock prefers being in the Championship, which he was quoted saying recently. They bought a squad that would do very well in the Championship, but probably doesn't have the right level for the Premier League. So while I agree that maybe getting Warnock could help, I don't think they have the squad to stay up. I think Huddersfield could manage it. I agree. I like Wagner as a manager, but I do think both of them are largely doomed unless something big does happen between now and January, and then maybe buy some players and see what happens. But I think both of them are pretty much down. I do agree. I'm not sure Newcastle are as doomed, but I can fully understand why a Newcastle fan would feel like they were. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and we are back. Richard, we'll start with Manchester City. There has been a lot of news swirling about Mendy of late and his lateness to training and his injury and being dropped out of first-team training. Could you give us a little better sense from your understanding of what's going on with Benjamin Mendy at the club at the moment?
Yes, I can, and there is also some stuff that I absolutely can't say on air that has been happening with Benjamin Mendy. He at the moment is a problem, and I think quite a big one, and it's made all the more frustrating by the fact that he's a hell of a footballer, but at the moment he's in real danger of, I think, messing up his future at City, and in turn threatening to, because of how he is off the pitch, threatening to become a bit of a wasted talent. And I know it's really early to say that, so just to be clear, I'm not saying I think that will happen, but if he carries on the way he's going at the moment, that is the only way he can finish. I trust City and trust Guardiola to be able to convince him to alter his ways. But yeah, it came out after the Arsenal game, at the first game of the season. It came out after that he'd been fined in the lead up to that for being late to training. And you sort of think, well, that can happen. You know, I'm sure we've all done it. You misjudge the traffic or you wake up late, you can be late to work. For City to issue a fine and for that to be leaked and become public, when you would imagine it, other players have done it, would suggest that it's more of an ongoing concern than just a one-off. They had him at City's insistence, and I think Guardiola's insistence, but certainly club enforced, they moved him away from the city centre to a quieter area, more in the sort of suburbs around Manchester, to reduce his distractions that he might be sort of tempted by in the city or that he might be faced with. He's been given a driving ban that wasn't directly for speeding, but it was for four times failing to answer the charge and failing to confirm who was driving when his car was caught speeding. There's just a lot of little things at the moment. There was another I can say this because I know that this was in an article over the weekend. There was another incident between the Arsenal game at the start of the season and the Huddersfield game, which is our second game. There was an incident between then that could have been very, very serious. It didn't amount to anything, and clearly Guardiola was happy enough to play Mendy in that game. And in fact, Mendy was exceptional in that game. He won rave reviews for how good he was. But it was an incident that, in line with everything else, it was not a good thing to have against his name. And so with this latest stuff that's come out about him being late for his treatment whilst he's injured, and I think it's been said that he was excluded from the squad for a week. Like, that's pretty serious stuff, because the guy he's potentially hugely, hugely important. He gives Guardiola an entirely different option in how we play, because he's so good out wide. He's so good at crossing. His defending at times this season has left a little bit to be desired, but I think on the charitable side of that, we can say, well, really, he might be a year into England, but he's only about seven games into a Premier League career. So we can afford him that as an excuse and say he's still getting used to defending in the Premier League. No problem with that. But if his behaviour starts affecting his performance, then we lose that. We lose that option, and Guardiola will only put up with it for so long. So it is a concern at the moment. I think what came across last season as the happy-go-lucky, cheerful even through the adversity of a season-long injury, very amusing social media presence, which sort of shone a light onto the team spirit around the club. Around the team and the general vibe around the club. Suddenly that's gone quiet. Obviously, Guardiola made a comment about that at the start of the season as well. And for the last week or so, he's not been posting anything on his Twitter or Instagram, which is notable. Because he's conspicuous by his absence, is a bit of a concern at the moment. Is Mr. Mendy, but like I say, I have faith that Guardiola will sort of whip him into shape. But it's a bit concerning that a player at this level sort of seems to need that.
Yeah, are you confident in any of the potential replacements for him within the squad, or if you think this gets worse, would you pursue that position in January?
I think Delph was so good last season that he's proven that he can be an effective left back. The team don't lose out for having him there, but what they gain when they have Mendy is huge, because that's his natural position. Delph doesn't get up and down the wing in the same way. He can't swing a ball in the same way, but he's perfectly competent in that position, as is Zinchenko. In fact, Zinchenko was a huge part of why we beat Brighton at weekend, because although we dominated that game, there was a three or four times at least in the first half when Brighton looked to spring a ball down the right, and were it not for some incredibly well-timed interceptions by Zinchenko, they'd have been through, and then all it would have taken would have been a good ball into the box, and we might have found ourselves conceding one or two goals against the run of play. But it was clearly something that they targeted, and Zinchenko was brilliant there. And his switching of play, he was pinging sort of 50, 60-yard balls quite regularly from left back out to Sané, Sterling, Bernardo. He was excellent. So I don't really have concerns that we're in trouble without Mendy. And so I don't think it makes... I don't think it means that we have to urgently look for a left back. We can bide our time. But certainly it would be very disappointing to have another season, either through injury or otherwise, where Mendy isn't available to us, because what he gives us when he's on top form is hugely, hugely significant and makes us very hard to live with.
Yeah, and then let's just touch on one thing quickly. Aguero signed an extension, which we talked about in the preseason, was something that either had or hadn't happened, but now it's both happened and been announced. Do you think that changes his role at City this year, now that it's pretty much ensured that he'll be here beyond the offseason?
Yeah, I think one of the questions I actually thought about this when it was announced, one of the questions that you asked me at the start of the season was how many games would he play? And I think I suggested that this might be the year when, though it wasn't what I would advocate, this might be the year when Pep really put Jesus in ahead of him. But Aguero continues to prove that actually with the work that he's put in, and for all these rumours about him not having a great relationship with Guardiola, that stuff doesn't matter. If it's true, it doesn't matter. You don't have to have a fantastic personal relationship with your manager to do a good job, and Aguero is living proof of that. He was already a fine, fine footballer, already one of the best strikers that the Premier League has ever seen, to be quite honest. He has moulded his game, he has adapted, he works his backside off. Both of our goals against Brighton were proof of the different way that he can play. When he picked the ball up deep, drove at the defence and laid the ball off, once for Sterling to score, once for him to then follow it up and score himself. He is an exceptional footballer, and actually, partly through his own brilliance and improvement, because he is a better footballer now than he was when Guardiola took over, and partly through Jesus being in a bit of a hinterland at the moment of maybe not quite knowing what kind of footballer he's supposed to be, whether he's a goal scorer, whether he's somebody who holds the ball up and connects play. He's not in great form at the moment. Aguero is well out ahead in front. That doesn't mean that he'll never be rotated, but if at the moment it was straight choice of who's going to give the team more, there's absolutely no question that it's Aguero. And so, yeah, he's on for a lot of goals again this season, fitness allowing. And next season, there's no reason why he shouldn't carry on being around the sort of 30 goal mark and more, to be honest, if he stays fit.
All right, well, certainly promising there. Steve, coming to you now to talk about Tottenham. Pretty disappointing loss to Inter Milan in the first Champions League match of the season. I compared this one to the first Dortmund match last season, where I basically felt if we won it, we'd probably be in a pretty secure position to advance. If we didn't, we wouldn't. Obviously, that loss then makes us have a very difficult battle, obviously, Barcelona midweek. But having lost that first match, what are your expectations of Tottenham's Champions League run now?
Well, it's funny, Kevin, because I actually, in that Inter defeat, I saw shades of the Juventus game rather than the Dortmund game.
Yeah.
Way in which we weren't able to manage the game out from a position of strength, even when Juve equalized and we would still go through, we weren't able to manage the game. And that was, we saw that absolutely writ large in that Inter Milan game. It was a very, very disappointing game. And I know you and I have talked on here before about, you know, the value that you put on winning trophies. And for me, it's just that you progress year on year as a team. And part of that progression has to be that you learn from your mistakes. And it was like watching the Juve game over again, essentially how we threw that game away against Inter. You know, we haven't had the best start to the season. I know that's difficult to say, given that we beat Man United 3-0 and actually, you know, were good value for it and played them off the park. But Wednesday's game is going to be tough, I think, against Barca. But going back to what I said earlier about Pochettino's motivation and the fact that, you know, he has the Espanyol background and he's able to rise or try and get the team to rise to the occasion. It's going to be interesting to see who's in and who's out, because one of the things Harry gets all the headlines, obviously, but one of the things that has hampered us so far this season has been the lack of form and the injuries to both Eriksen and Dele. And the fact that they, you know, Eriksen hasn't clicked in the games that he's played, Dele has been injured, and, you know, that needs to be addressed. And again, of course, that then leads to people sort of criticizing the club for not making any signings in the off season. And you and I have talked about this before. Again, it's like I'm against making signings just for the sake of signing players. If the right player is available, you have to go into each season thinking that every position on your team can be upgraded if the right player is available. Clearly, Poch and Levy between them decided that the team that we had that did so well last season. And again, this is the issue. And Harry Redknapp mentioned it on the TV the other night. How do you go to someone and say to them, "We want you to come to our club, but you're not going to be the first choice"? That then inevitably takes you down a road of only having a certain caliber of player, and that's not improving the team. That's not upgrading the team. But I think the big issue that we have to address sort of going forward, which has raised its head, is what happens with Moussa. Moussa Dembele, you know, obviously one of the first names on the team sheet when he's fit. But long term, what do we, you know, what do we, how do we work in the sort of Eric Dier, Harry Winks, Wanyama combinations to compensate for the times when Moussa's not there? So I think it's been a patchy start. We played some great football. Moura has been fantastic. Obviously, Lamella has, you know, hot at the moment. Son is great. I think it's too early to get a sense of whether there's something to worry about. You know what I mean? But I am worried about the midfield a little bit with Moussa.
Yeah, very similar thinking here, because my follow-up question was already, what is your ideal midfield pairing? Because we saw at the weekend, Dembele and Dier get like their fifth or sixth consecutive start in all competitions. Yeah. And we have not looked good in central midfield. Then Dier got pushed back to center back because we pulled off Jan. And Dembele came off, and I think Winks came on. And so all of a sudden it was Winks and Wanyama in midfield, and all of a sudden we dominated the midfield until the match was over, much in the way that we did not control the midfield against Inter Milan or the Juve match, as you mentioned previously. So if you had your druthers, which two central midfielders would you deploy together at the moment?
Well, at the moment, it would be Winks. Winks every time. Winks is the future of our midfield, I think. I think if he gets back to the player that he was before he had that terrible ankle injury, I think he's absolutely the sort of player that we build our midfield around. Again, we have to say, who's his best partner? At the moment, it's probably Moussa, Winks and Moussa. But, you know, it's the unpredictability of what you're going to get on a week-to-week basis. We've talked again about what's Dier's favorite position or where's he most functional. But he gives you that flexibility within a game as well. If the game's not turning out the way Poch planned, then we have a little bit of flexibility that we can move Eric around. I think we're lucky to have the midfielders that we do. I just think we have to address the idea that perhaps, I mean, Moose is what, 30, 31 now?
We
have to address the fact that, you know, we can't always rely on that caliber of midfielder. But for me, absolutely, I want to build the midfield around Harry Winks.
Yeah, for me, I think we accidentally stumbled upon it, which was Winks and Wanyama. And I'd love to see that, especially because Winks, in a sample size of two, has done incredibly well against Spanish clubs. The way he truly handled the midfield against Real Madrid. And in the second match, it was just him. We basically played a 4-1-4-1, and he was the one stuck dealing with Modric and Kroos. And he did an incredibly admirable job, considering we hadn't really seen much of him because of that injury before that. But yeah, I agree with you, Winks. And he brings passing in central midfield, which sometimes we can get away with if we have both Eriksen, Dele, and sometimes Lamella on the pitch. But in the absence of both Eriksen and Dele Alli, which it looks like we will be midweek, I think Winks becomes all the more important there. And Wanyama is just better than Dier as a defensive midfielder. He just is. His passing, the thing that used to differentiate them was in the 4-2-3-1, you preferred Dier because of his passing. But his passing has been atrocious this season. So I'd rather have somebody that'll actually break up play and just lay it off to either Dembele or Winks next to him than Dier, who's currently finding, you know, the coaching staff on the sideline before he's actually finding his own teammates.
Yeah. Also, actually have to mention how good Trippier has been the last few games.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, he has just really stepped up when we need him to step up. But again, part of the problem is we need the back four to be able to cover for him, or the back three if we're playing with a back three. Because sometimes he'll get caught a little bit out of position and we get caught on the break. But for what he brings going forward in terms of the contribution to a link-up play with Harry particularly is something that I'm really, really pleased about, and hopefully he can continue to improve.
Yeah, I haven't actually been able to confirm this or not, but there was a stat floating around today that no two players have combined for more goals since the beginning of last season than Trippier and Kane.
Oh, is that right? That wouldn't surprise me, actually.
Yeah, I saw it. My initial thought was Azpilicueta to Morata, which they did like four times in the first month last season. But then, obviously, Morata started struggling and then lost his job. But that is also a thing that might be true.
Sorry. When Trippier takes the set pieces, of course, that's, you know, I'd like to see the stats for set pieces versus open play. Well, but certainly what Trippier brings to us is a huge positive.
Agreed. And also, shout out to Danny Rose on the other side, who came from the transfer list to being clearly better than Ben Davis thus far this season and winning that job back. So another very important player to us when he's on form.
Again, though, it goes back to this whole argument about if you don't sign somebody, you're saying to the players that you have, we have, on the one hand, we have faith in you. We know that there's nobody out there that we can go and get who would displace you from your starting position. But then look at the complacency that theoretically could engender. You know, we have three or four very, very good subs on the bench, you know, that we can bring on to shake things up. But what we really want is two high caliber players at each position.
Mm-hmm. And we're close to it.
We are.
All right. Now we'll head into Player Watch, where I thought we'd discuss which players are most in and out of form at your club. Richard, we'll lead in with you and Manchester City.
Most in form. That's a good question. I'm going to go for Emerick Laporte. He's the only player so far to be an ever-present in the league, which I think is no small feat, really. I know we're still early in the season, but with rotation being the name of the game these days and being such a key part of how Guardiola manages his squad, and with Laporte being the newest of our available centre-backs, I think it's hugely impressive, actually, that he's already achieved that, or that he's been trusted so regularly. I think our best back two and our first choice back two now really is Stones and Laporte. They are clearly the future of that defence. But I sort of see at the moment, I would see Stones as the lead in that back two. Well, certainly that's how I've seen it this season, that his sort of maturity and having been the lead in England's defence at the World Cup next to Harry Maguire, I think Stones has really come on. But actually, Laporte, he's just very, very assured. And he sort of, for a centre-back, goes about his business quite quietly. But he's so smooth. He's so good on the ball. His defending is excellent. He's already got himself a goal this season, which isn't a typical part of his game as a centre-back, but he's becoming more of a threat at set pieces, I would say. So he's never going to be the headline grabber when you've got the likes of Sterling, Sané, De Bruyne. Obviously, De Bruyne is injured, but usually Aguero and the rest up front. He's never your headline maker, but he's just so good and so consistent that he's looking like a really, really astute buy. For most out of form, I don't really know if I could pick one, to be honest. I suppose I'd go... I should say I can't pick one that I haven't already said. Jesus would probably be my most out-of-form player. I think it's gone maybe a little bit under the radar that he's not really pulling up trees at the moment. Obviously, he had his injury last season. In fact, he's had injuries in both of his seasons with us that have kept him out at really inopportune times. But I think people forget that actually he was out of form before his injury last year. I think it was... I'm trying to remember this off the top of my head, but either no goals or one goal in the 11 or 12 appearances leading up to the injury.
Which, fantasy players will not forget.
I'm sure. He's so, yeah, I mean, and obviously goal scoring isn't everything. There is a huge part of his game is about playing with his back to goal and bringing in other players. And he does do that well. But at the moment, I think he's... not through fault of his own, but through how people perceive him. I still think he's trading a little bit on that start that he made with us, where he was scoring in almost every game, and he looked like a real live wire. And it's really starting to look like that isn't his game at all. And by no means do I mean this is to be, you know, sort of mega critical of him, because he's still a young lad, still learning the game. But it's just not, I don't think it's quite what we expected. And he is, I think I said before, that he's in this middle ground of not quite knowing actually what kind of player he is at the moment. And we could do with working that out soon for just for his own development. So by no means a writing him off. But honestly, if you're giving the players a scorecard, his is probably the one that checks out lowest at the moment.
Interesting stuff. And Steve, who do you think has been most in and out of form at Tottenham thus far?
Well, I mean, we talked about it in the last segment there, but I think Trippier has really been playing really good stuff at the moment. And Lamella and Moura, also very hot. Also, I mentioned for Paulo Gazzaniga, who's come in the absence of of Lloris, and has done okay, actually. I mean, we talked at the start of the season about how we'd like him to get some, a good run of complete games. And I think that's done him well. It stood him in good stead. So, I'm very happy with how he has come in and helped out. But Trippier definitely seems to be the man of the moment. Disappointing. Dyer, as you mentioned, Kevin, I mean, Dyer's passing has been less than I think even he would admit is the quality required. Other than that, it depends on the circumstances, to be honest with you. Individual players have disappointing games, but I don't think there's anybody consistently who's really underachieving at the moment. Obviously, you know, when Christian, Eriksen and Dele are fully fit, then we'll need them to sort of click and step up. And I think once that happens and we get back to the way we were playing last year and the way we were approaching games last year, I think there's a lot more good things to come from the team. But generally, it's a patchy start, but generally we're heading in the right direction.
All right, and we will wrap up with a couple of Champions League previews, since all representatives here are going to be doing that. Virgil, we'll lead in with you. City going to be facing Hoffenheim on Tuesday. How do you see this match going?
We've got to be better than we were against Lyon, because we were poor in that game, and suddenly and unexpectedly we find ourselves in a position where this game becomes really important to win it, because losing your first game, as we experienced in what feels like the distant past now, winning your first game, or the difference, sorry, between winning and losing your first game in a six-game group is huge. I think everybody would expect City to still get out of the group. You'd probably still expect them to do it in first place. And if anything, the only real difference that the Lyon defeat should have made is that if you're a betting man, then after that game was probably your best time to bet on City winning the Champions League, because before that, a whole lot of bookies had them as favourites, which may have altered slightly after a surprising defeat. This will be... I mean, it's hard to preview a City game these days and say anything different any time. You would expect City to go in on the front foot, and you'd expect them to look to make a quick start to really try and establish a bit of a authority in this game, just to make sure that Hoffenheim don't think that they can take advantage of any nerves that might be present as a result of how important this game has now become. Squad selection is absolutely impossible to predict these days. You can just never call it, because Guardiola rotates so much. He's got so many different tactical options available to him that it almost makes predicting a team a redundant exercise. Again, another nightmare for those of you that play fantasy football, I would think. It will be about trying to assert an early dominance, like we did in the games last year against Feyenoord and Basel, where those games were over before they'd even begun. I would expect an attempt at the same, and I would expect a City win.
All right, and Steve, we kind of prefaced the Tottenham match a little bit earlier in the show. How do you think Tottenham will set up for this one?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. We're going to be without Dele, and I think an awful lot is going to depend on whether or not Jan is fit as well. But this is a must win for us, and it's terrible to sort of say that for your second game in the group. But when you think back to how well we did in the home games in the group stages last year, that was effectively what sealed our progression. So yeah, I think after that disappointing, very very disappointing loss against Inter in the first game, I think we absolutely have to go for this and win it. So I would expect Harry Winks to start. We were talking about him earlier, and probably Moura, probably Lamella, but we'll see how we go. I think. There's been a couple of stories about who Barcelona are not going to have in their squad this time. I don't think that really matters. A team like that is very strong, no matter who's on the park for them. Although, mind you, their away record last year in the group stages was not stellar. So there's always the possibility that they don't like to travel for a game that. That they think might be a throwaway. So we'll see. I think we're gonna miss Jan if he's not fit. That's all I'm gonna say. But I still think we can pull it out.
All right, I certainly like that optimism, and that will be where we leave the show today. So if you guys would like to tell folks where they can find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Richard the Burns, and I am a member of the Blue Moon podcast, which is a dedicated Manchester City podcast released every Friday. I am a member of a rotating panel, so you don't always have to put up with me. I do write two blogs a month for the Blue Moon podcast, which is available to people who back us on Patreon for the princely sum of $2 a month, if anybody is interested in that. Thank you very much for listening.
Yep, thanks for having me on again, Kev. My name's Steve McGookin, and you can get me on Twitter at Steve McGookin, McGookin. As I say, you can join the conversation at nyspurs.com or nyspurs.com or nyspurs on Twitter. And for my non-football writing, if you're interested, you can get me at northernslant.com. Thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, at Kev Roth on Twitter. You can find my writings over at goal.com, as well as this week I'll be putting up my second article for ESPN, for ESPN Fantasy, which is just a ridiculous thing. But if you're interested in talking about the fantasy side of what's going on at Manchester United, that'll be over there. And as always, keep it tuned on this channel for both the FPL Roundtable and the Championship Roundtable, which obviously address the topics that are in their names. But thanks to you two so much for joining us. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.